Hello and welcome to the Revisiting Old Favourites podcast in the Inner Sanctum. Thanks as always for joining me. And this week I'm going to be reading something that's published in the latest issue, the spring 2025 issue, unless there's been a summer one since then, I don't know, but I think this is still the latest issue. The spring 2025 issue of The Classical Teacher, Saving Western Civilization One Student at a Time, which is the magazine of Memoria Press. There's some other good articles in it, such as Principles of Pedagogy by Martin Cothran, Knowing What Nature Is by Christopher O. Bloom, and What the Left Brainers Get Right by Lee Lowe. But my essay in here is Hilaire Belloc and the Humanizing Power of History. So that's what I shall be reading. The truth will set us free, so says Christ. Yet if this is so, which of course it is, it follows that falsehood will enslave us. Falsehood in history prevents us from understanding our past and, in consequence, our present. Properly understood, history is a chronological map that shows us not only where we have come from, but where we are and how we got here. It is also possible to project where we are likely to be going in the future by drawing the line of knowledge on the chronological map from where we have come to where we are now and extending the line into the realm of future possibilities. In this sense, history can also be a prophet. This, however, is only true if the chronological map is accurate. If it has been drawn by those with prejudiced perceptions or a prejudiced agenda, it will only succeed in getting us lost. There are few things more dangerous than an inaccurate map, especially if we find ourselves in perilous terrain. Perhaps at this juncture we need to proceed from Christ to Pilate, to pass from Christ's assertion that the truth will set us free, to Pilate's question, what is truth? In the context of the study of history, the truth requires knowledge of three distinct facets of historical reality, namely historical chronology, historical mechanics, and historical philosophy. That is, when things happened, how things happened, and why things happened. The last of these, though it is dependent factually on the other two, is the most important. If we don't know why things happened, history remains devoid of meaning. It makes no sense. As such, historians must have knowledge of the history of belief. They must know what people believed when they did the things that they did in order to know why they acted as they did. They must have empathy with the great ideas that shaped human history, even if they don't have sympathy with them. This whole issue was addressed with great lucidity by Hilaire Belloc, perhaps the most important historian of the 20th century. Quote, "The worst fault in writing history is the fault of not knowing what the spiritual state of those whom one describes really was. Gibbon and his master Voltaire, the very best of reading, are for that reason bad writers of history. To pass through the tremendous history of the Trinitarian dispute from which our civilization arose and to treat it as a farce is not history. To write the story of the 16th century in England and to make of either the Protestant or the Catholic a grotesque is to miss history altogether." End quote. Clearly frustrated at this supercilious approach toward the past that blinded many historians, Belloc offers a practical example of its effects upon scholarship. Quote, "There is an enormous book called Volume 1 of a Cambridge History of the Middle Ages. It is 759 pages in length of close print. It does not mention the Mass once. That is as though you were to write a history of the Jewish dispersion without mentioning the synagogue, or of the British Empire without mentioning the City of London or the Navy. End quote. In order to avoid the chronological snobbery that presumes the superiority of the present over the past, and which causes this lack of proportion and focus, historians must see history through the eyes of the past and not through the eyes of the present. Historians must put themselves into the minds and hearts of the protagonists they are studying. To do this adequately, they must have knowledge of philosophy and theology in order to understand their own academic discipline and in order to remain disciplined in their study of it. An ignorance of philosophy and theology means an ignorance of history. Hilaire Belloc's principal legacy as a historian falls into three areas. First is his seminal struggle with H.G. Wells over the outline of history. Second, his groundbreaking approach to the history of the Reformation. And finally, his telescopic and panoramic study of the great ideas that have shaped history. In addition, as a man of omnivorous taste and multifarious talent, he also wrote on French and European history, military history, economic history, and English history. Since such a panoramic scope is too broad to be covered adequately in a solitary essay, we'll be focusing on Belloc's famous, or notorious, battle with H.G. Wells. Belloc's war of words with Wells over the latter's publication of The Outline of History was one of the most controversial and high-profile academic battles of the 20th century. Belloc objected to his adversary's tacitly anti-Christian stance, epitomised by the fact that Wells had devoted more space in his history to the Persian campaign against the Greeks than he had given to the figure of Christ. But it was the underlying philosophy of materialistic determinism in Wells' history that was most anathema to Belloc. Wells believed that human progress was both blind and beneficial, unshakable, unstoppable, and utterly inexorable. He believed that history was the product of invisible and immutable evolutionary forces that were coming to fruition in the 20th century. Human history had its primitive beginnings in the caves, he said, but was now reaching its climax in the modern age with the final triumph of science over religion. The emergence of science from the ashes of superstition heralded a new dawn for humanity, a brave new world of happiness made possible by technology. Obviously, such an approach precluded any serious or objective consideration of the great ideas that had forged human history, since, in Wells's view, these ideas were shaped by superstition and ignorance, which had been superseded by humanity's progress towards modernity. Wells's history had been, to Belloc, like a red rag to a bull. It was, therefore, no great surprise that he charged. Belloc accused Wells of prejudiced provincialism, claiming that, in history proper, Wells, quote, was never taught to appreciate the part played by Latin and Greek culture and never introduced to the history of the early church, end quote. Furthermore, Wells suffered, quote, from the very grievous fault of being ignorant that he is ignorant. He has the strange cocksuredness of the man who only knows the old conventional textbook of his school days and mistakes it for universal knowledge, end quote. The controversy reached a conclusion and a climax in 1926 when Belloc's articles refuting Wells's history were collected into a single volume and published as A Companion to Mr. Wells's Outline of History. Wells responded with, "Mr. Belloc objects," to which Belloc, determined to have the last word, replied with, "Mr. Belloc still objects." The lasting legacy and lingering lesson of the war of words between Belloc and Wells is its exemplification of the fact that one's philosophical presuppositions will invariably colour one's understanding of the outline of history. Belloc understood the beliefs of the past and, as such, could discern why people act as they did. He could see why things happened as well as when and how they happened. Wells, on the other hand, regarded the beliefs of the past as superstitious and dismissed them. His chronological snobbery prevented his analysis of history from rising above the when and how. Belloc's war with Wells also represented an encapsulation and embodiment of the clash between progress and tradition, a clash that was summarised succinctly by the poet Roy Campbell. Quote, "The orgy of irresponsible innovations and inventions, which now threatens to become a Gadarene stampede of headlong and irresistible impetus, was regarded as something beneficial and called progress, which it certainly is, being downhill and completely without brakes, the most rapid and disastrous progress ever witnessed." Campbell's words had the benefit of hindsight, being written in 1949, a quarter of a century after the Belloc-Wells controversy, and a few short years after the fruits of progress had enabled the atrocities of Hitler and Stalin and the dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Belloc had foreseen that a blindly optimistic faith in progress could lead to, quote, "sheer darkness and strange things in the dark," end quote. Whereas Wells believed that darkness was a thing to be found in the dark ages of the past, and the future held the promise of enlightened scientific thinking. It would take the horrors of the Second World War to open Wells's eyes to the evils that could be unleashed by science in the service of progressive ideologies. Shaken out of his progressive dementia, Wells's last book, written shortly before his death in 1946 and entitled appropriately The Mind at the End of Its Tether, was full of the desolation of disillusionment. In the end, Wells's progressive optimism, already defeated in debate by Belloc, was defeated in practice by reality itself. In the wake of the controversy with Wells, Belloc became increasingly preoccupied with historical questions. In history, we must abandon the defensive, he had written in 1924, at the height of the war with Wells. We must make our opponents understand not only that they are wrong in their philosophy, nor only uninformed in their judgment of cause and effect, but out of touch with the past, which is ours. End quote. Hilaire Belloc shows us that a true vision of the past enables us to understand the present. It situates us, it orientates us. Today, more than ever, our culture needs to heed the humanising power of history. Well, thanks so much for joining me in the Revisiting Our Favourites podcast in the Inner Sanctum. Until next week, goodbye and God bless.